Sick Boy Podcast is a health and comedy show about what it's like to be sick. Wait, is that right? How can illness be funny?
You'd be surprised.
Okay. Sick Boy is hosted by
me, Brian Stever.
And me, Taylor McGilvery.
And myself, Jeremy Saunders.
Come on in and join us to melt your heart, learn something fascinating, and bust a belly laugh. Trust us, you'll be glad you did.
You can find Sick Boy on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your pods.
This is a CBC podcast.
So what is this test?
So this one is supposed to measure our cell age. Hmm. So it looks like this one is a blood test. So what do we need to do? It looks complicated.
It does look complicated.
I've learned that aging is about more than the number of years you've lived. Some people get old faster, riding the express train to age-related diseases and death. Others stay disease-free well into their 80s. So which will I be? I've learned about this test that can analyze my blood and tell me my biological age. Other people I talk to say they wouldn't want to know. But to my wife Laura and me, this feels important.
And then it says one blood collection tube. Ah, okay. And one bandage. Okay, yeah. So you need that. And then you need the actual tube from the kit. And a bandage.
Our son Bryson has a rare genetic condition called Grin disorder that comes with severe cognitive and physical disabilities. There's currently no cure. So we want to live as long and healthy as possible to be there for him. But I've read that the stress of being a parent, caregiver to a vulnerable child can cause premature aging. Not only that, but I've gone through kidney failure. And now I take drugs to weaken my immune system so my body won't reject my new kidney. And weakened immunity? That's one of the key hallmarks of aging. Is all of this conspiring to make me older than my years? Okay.
And then it says to place and push the lancet firmly against the clean finger. You may feel a slight pinch. Do you want me to do it for you, or are you okay to do it?
Sure, why don't you do it?
Okay. Oh gosh, I don't want to hurt you. And you don't want to hurt yourself, it's okay. It's just going to be a tiny little
pinch, right? It's just like a blood sugar test, right?
You don't.
Yep.
I'm Keith MacArthur, and this is Unlocking the Fountain, a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or reverse it. Whether you die at 60 or 100 is often about much more than dumb luck. It's also about the genes you were born with and your environment and lifestyle. So I want to learn as much as I can about how my genes and fitness and environment will affect how long I'll live.
Why does man have to die? The world goes on for millions of years, and how long is a man's life? This much, a drop, a microscopic fragment.
We can completely arrest the aging process, in many cases reversing its most noticeable signs.
How old are you?
You wouldn't believe me.
This is episode 5, expiration date. Steve Horvath was still just a teenager when he began to worry about the limits of human lifespan. He talked to his high school friends and convinced them that something needed to be done.
And so therefore, we decided to make a pact, which we called the Gilgamesh Project.
After the legendary Mesopotamian ruler who is said to have lived for more than 120 years.
Where we decided to dedicate our lives to advancing lifespan. And we were, of course, complete amateurs and very naive.
Horvath was the only member of the group to go on to become a scientist focused on aging. His first research projects didn't go the way he'd hoped. But he stumbled into a huge discovery when a colleague asked for his help on a project related to what's known as epigenetics. Okay, so what's that? Well, think of your genetics, the 30,000 genes in your DNA, as light bulbs.
At any given time, some of them are shining brightly and others are turned off. Not all of them are active at all times. Epigenetics are like a light switch that turns genes on and off, or more specifically, a dimmer switch, because genes can also be dialed down. They're still doing their job, just not working as hard at it.
Every cell has exactly the same DNA sequence. So what determines whether a cell is a blood cell or a brain cell or a liver cell? Well, these are epigenetic changes that tell a cell you should express the following genes in order to become a liver cell, for example. And that's accomplished by epigenetics.
Our genes are fixed, but our epigenetics are not. Cells can be turned on or off by stress, diet, and other environmental factors. For example, kids who grow up with trauma might have epigenetic tags, almost like interference in the dimmer switch, that affects genes related to stress. And this could affect how those kids respond to stress in the future. Anyway, Horvath was looking at epigenetics for a project completely unrelated to aging, but he found himself returning to his old passion.
But then I said, well, let me just look for an aging effect in these data, you know.
He focused on a type of epigenetic interference called methylation, where little tags are added to your DNA. Almost like post-it notes on the dimmer switches, with instructions on which genes to read and which to ignore. Post-it notes on dimmer switches. Okay, it's a messy metaphor, but you get it, right? Back to Horvath.
I immediately recognized that methylation really had this very strong correlation with chronologic age. And I had just wasted 2 years of my life, you know, studying other data where I was dreaming of seeing this kind of a signal, you know. And then I really discarded all other projects and said, I need to focus on methylation studies when it comes to building biomarkers of aging.
This was a pretty big deal. Horvath had discovered a new hallmark of aging. The older you get, the more notes get posted on certain genes, the dimmer those genetic light bulbs become. For example, some genes involved in fighting tumors get turned down as you age. That's one of the reasons cancer is an age-related disease. So Horvath reverse-engineered this discovery to develop a test that could estimate your biological age based on the amount of methylation in your blood or saliva. So this blood test Laura and I took, it's measuring this interference in our dimmer switches to calculate our biological age. I promise not to brag too much if it turns out I have the biological age of an 18-year-old athlete. But while I wait for my results, I want to know, if epigenetics are a marker of aging, do they also cause it? And can it be reversed? David Sinclair.
Hi, it's David.
Hi, it's Keith. How are you?
An Australian-born researcher at Harvard thinks the answer to both of these questions is yes. Sinclair's team has spent nearly a decade making mice age faster by artificially inflating methylation.
And that worked. But that work is so voluminous that we're still trying to publish that. But it did give us the impetus to say, okay, if aging is truly epigenetic, then it should be reversible.
In other words, if you can speed up aging, you should be able to slow it down too. And Sinclair had an idea about how his lab might be able to engineer this reversal by using what's known as the Yamanaka factors. In 2006, Japanese scientist Shinya Yamanaka showed that by brightening the metaphoric light bulbs of four specific genes, the Yamanaka factors, he could turn any cell back into a stem cell. Stem cells are like a blank canvas. They have the ability to become any kind of tissue, blood, bones, brain. Sinclair believed these same genes might also be the key to reversing aging. And after years of trial and error on skin cells, students in his lab found they could reverse aging by expressing just three of the Yamanaka factors.
And so by introducing the three Yamanaka genes, does that actually affect the epigenome or?
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah, we see that the epigenome goes back in age, the DNA methylation.
Now, doing something in cells is one thing. Doing it in a living animal, that's quite another. And this job would fall to another grad student in Sinclair's lab. His first efforts didn't go well.
He was ready to fail. He was ready to quit, actually. His PhD was not working out. And then he said, why don't we try to reverse aging in the eye?
So they took some mice and made them blind by pinching their optic nerves. It's cruel, I know. But most advances in human health and medicine do rely on animal testing. They took the blind mice and then expressed the three Yamanaka genes in just one eye.
And then he looked at the optic nerve of those mice. And what's beautiful about it is you can look at one eye that was not genetically treated and then the other one that was. And he found that the one that was growing back. And he texted me a picture of the optic nerve growing back. And he said, David, do you see what I see? And I said, yeah, I see it. And he goes, what are you seeing? And I said, the future.
This technique promised to do more than just delay age-related diseases. It might be able to reverse them and maybe even reverse the aging process itself.
That was one of those moments where it felt like we had moved the needle in biology.
Laura and I are trying to get a sense of how long we might live. And it turns out that the dimmer switch in our genes isn't the only thing we can measure that correlates with age. Another is the length of our telomeres, the protective caps at the ends of our DNA strands. Their length and how quickly they shrink is another important hallmark of aging. In 1985, a researcher named Elizabeth Blackburn discovered a substance that the body uses to lengthen telomeres. She called it telomerase. Alyssa Eppel was working as a junior psychology researcher when she learned about Blackburn's discoveries.
So I was a postdoc at UCSF, and I just kept reading about her work. It was kind of everywhere in the news at that point, and wondering if this might be a model of aging that we could actually look at in my clinical studies on people.
Blackburn had studied aging in yeast and mice. Eppel proposed that they collaborate to study telomere length in people. Specifically, she wanted to know how stress affected telomere length. For their first experiment, Blackburn and Eppel measured the telomeres of parent caregivers, people like my wife Laura and me, who have children with profound chronic illness. They found that caregiving mothers didn't always have shorter telomeres than moms in the control group, but their stress appeared to accumulate. The more years a mom had spent looking after a child with a chronic illness, the shorter her telomeres, even after accounting for age. Amazingly, the researchers were able to quantify the impact. They said caregiving moms who reported the highest level of stress had a biological age 10 years older than those with the least stress.
Oh my God, 10 years older? That's terrifying, actually.
My wife, Laura.
Yeah, that's a bit of a wake-up call that perhaps rather than just living with the stress, I need to do something about it.
I talked to Eppel about what her research means for our family.
And so my wife and I, you know, are caregivers of this kind of high need child. So it did seem to really hit home in a personal way where you talked about that having an effect on telomeres.
I have a big sigh for you as a what we call super parent. And I really do know that it's not very comforting to hear this research about the high burden of caregiving parenting.
That's an understatement. Laura and I have been taking care of Bryson for 15 years and will likely be doing it for decades to come. Part of this journey, investigating aging, is to find out how we can live long, healthy lives for Bryson
But is being there for him actually taking years off of our lives? Perhaps we'll get an answer to this from Steve Horvath's dimmer switch test. Now, there are also commercial tests that estimate age based on telomeres. But despite years of research involving this testing, Apple has never taken one. I find it interesting that you say you haven't had your telomeres tested, and your advice for me would be not to get them tested as part of this project?
Right, because I don't want you worried about what they are now, because you may have had short telomeres from birth.
I'm inclined to ignore Apple's advice and get my telomeres tested. How great would it be to have not one, but two estimates of my biological age? But it turns out that it's tough to get a telomere test in Canada during a pandemic. So instead, Laura and I also do a basic genetics test. One of the ones where you buy a kit at a drugstore to find out your ancestry and quirky traits like how likely you are to be bothered by chewing sounds.
You have to spit into it to get to the fill line. Gross. Close the funnel lid, screw on cap, seal in bag, ship box. This seems much more straightforward. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I'm good. Is that good?
Yeah, it looks like you're above.
Nasty. Okay, ready? So we'll close it now.
These tests can actually tell us a lot about whether our individual genes predispose us to longer or shorter lives. So now we're waiting anxiously for results from two tests.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share two hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
The toll of caregiving isn't the only thing that has me worried about how quickly I might be aging. There's also the matter of my medically impaired immune system. In early 2017, I was slowly dying of kidney failure. I felt sick and tired and old. But my sister Stephanie saved my life by donating one of her kidneys to me. The change in my health and energy levels in the weeks after the transplant were remarkable. I felt young again. To me, kidney transplants are a miracle of medicine. The only downside? There's a constant risk that my immune system will mistake the donated organ as a threat and try to get rid of it. So I'm on this steady cocktail of drugs to lower my immunity. This means I have to be extra careful not to catch the flu or COVID or eat foods that might lead to gut infection like cold cuts, sushi, and unpasteurized cheese. Most donor kidneys don't last for more than 20 years, so at some point I'll probably need to get another or go on dialysis. I already know that poses a risk for my potential lifespan. But what about the drugs? I reach out to Daniel Weiner from California's Buck Institute for Aging Research to learn more about the connection between the immune system and aging.
It's not known specifically whether the changes to the immune system drive the aging process or whether aging drives changes to the immune system, but data out there is showing that it's probably a little bit of both.
Like most hallmarks of aging, it's a little chicken and the egg. As we get older, our immune system weakens, and a weakened immune system makes us age faster. We saw during the pandemic that people over 80 had worse outcomes from COVID-19 infections. Not only that, but vaccines didn't work as well on them, or on people like me with artificially weakened immune systems. In addition to being more vulnerable to viruses and certain kinds of cancer, Weiner tells me there might be another way some immunosuppressant drugs speed up aging. These drugs impair various weapons of the immune system, including T cells. That's a type of white blood cell that helps fight infections and protects the body from cancer. T cells are also believed to help clear out senescent cells, the so-called zombie cells that can poison healthy cells around them. So if my body isn't making as many T cells, senescent cells could be building up prematurely.
So the theory would be then that someone in general with a compromised immune system or on immunosuppressants would age faster.
Exactly. You see this also in HIV right now. In general, it's thought that people with things like HIV or immune deficiency could be aging quicker.
So that's not great. But Weiner's colleague,
I'm David Furman.
He offers a glimpse of hope. Furman studies the connection between aging, immunity, and yet another hallmark of aging, inflammation. Acute inflammation is a healthy part of the immune system. Let's say you cut your finger and some bacteria gets in. Your finger is going to turn red, get a little swollen, maybe feel hot to the touch. It's part of the process of killing off the bacteria to keep you safe. But acute inflammation also has an evil twin.
Now, there's a very different type of inflammation, which I'm referring to here, and that's called systemic chronic inflammation. That's age-related, that goes into whole body. Your blood, if you will, is inflamed, and the triggers are different. So it's basically how you eat, what you drink, what you're exposed to, how you sleep, stress levels. The lifestyle we have, that drives inflammation, and this is age-related.
But here's the good news. One of the drugs I take to weaken my immune system has a side effect of slowing down chronic inflammation.
It would reduce systemic chronic inflammation and probably delay inflammatory aging processes.
So my drugs could be speeding up one hallmark of aging while slowing down another. And I guess, all things considered, one out of two ain't bad. A few weeks later, we get emails letting us know that our genetics tests are ready to review online. We start with our ancestry results.
So we learned that Laura is 100% British and Irish, and I'm 99.9% British and Irish.
Then move on to the quirky stuff.
Okay, so I can likely smell asparagus. I can likely taste bitter things. Oh, slightly higher odds of disliking cilantro, but I really like cilantro.
You do.
When it comes to my disposition to being bothered by chewing sounds, I'm genetically average. Oh, but my genetic muscle composition is similar to that found in elite power athletes. So that's cool. But what we really want to know is whether our genes predispose us to age-related diseases that could shorten our lifespans. Before we can check our disease risk, we have to go through an online consent process to confirm we really do want to know things like whether we're predisposed to diabetes or breast cancer. I've read about people who've received traumatic news from these tests. Many of them wish they'd never taken them. But good news or bad, I want to know. Laura checks first.
Okay, so let's view the report. I do not have the three genetic variants they tested.
Laura's report says she's at slightly higher risk of age-related blindness, but her genes don't predispose her to any of the big, scary diseases of aging.
Well, that's still fantastic news, right?
Absolutely.
Then it's my turn.
Ooh, I've got slightly increased risk of age-related macular degeneration.
I have that too.
Slightly increased risk of celiac disease. And slightly increased risk of late onset Alzheimer's. Oh no. Okay, well that's a bummer.
Are you upset about that or?
Yeah, I'm upset.
These tests are considered pretty accurate.
The one we use says it meets standards set by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for medical testing. At the same time, the legal disclosure says the test shouldn't be used to make medical decisions. Either way, this Alzheimer's result is not what I was hoping for. The idea of getting Alzheimer's terrifies me. But I still want to learn as much as I can. I've heard the real gold in these home tests isn't what they tell you explicitly. It's what you can find out by analyzing the raw genetic data they provide. So I found this website that lists a bunch of the different aging genes, so we can actually look and see if we're lucky with any of them. So the first one here is called FOXO3 gene.
And our browse.
Hey. Well, so tell me what you've got.
GT.
Okay, I've got TT.
Okay. What does this mean then?
So you have GT, increased odds of living longer.
Yes.
I have TT, so mine is typical.
Oh, okay. Typical's good.
Yeah. But what you've got is better. So it regulates cell death and functions as a tumor suppressor.
Nice.
Also involved in nutrient sensing, regulation of IGF-1, and the response to oxidative stress.
Very nice.
So that's a really good one. Okay, here's another gene, CETP.
I have AA.
So AA is typical.
Okay.
I have AG.
Oh, okay.
Which says longer lifespan, higher HDL cholesterol.
HDL, the good cholesterol. I remember Nir Barzilai, the researcher behind the TAME trial, telling me about this variant, how it's more common in centenarians.
The G allele is associated with a somewhat longer lifespan, lower odds of dementia, including Alzheimer's, and higher HDL levels. So maybe that will help make up for my other bad gene.
I find other websites with more genes to check. I become a bit obsessive about checking them all. Most of my aging-related genes are typical, but I find a couple more that can lead to longer than average longevity. Still, what I can't stop thinking about is Alzheimer's. I thought I was ready for bad news, but maybe I just didn't expect to get any. I try to learn more about the APO gene, the one that boosts my chances of getting Alzheimer's. We all have two copies of every gene, one from each parent. The company behind the home kit tests both copies, but only reports on one of them. But the raw data can help here too.
Okay, so I know I have one copy of APO4. That's the bad variant, right? It's the one that increases my chance of Alzheimer's. So if my other copy is also a 4, that's really bad news. Okay. So I have 1-4, I knew that, and 1-3.
So is this good news? Kind of. If this second gene had also been APO4, it would have meant that I was 5 or 6 times more likely to get late onset Alzheimer's. But even with just one copy, my risk is still 2 or 3 times higher than someone with no APO4 genes. Now, I'm not alone. Roughly 1 in 4 people have one APO4 gene. But it does put my odds of developing late onset Alzheimer's in the 35 to 50% range. So that could be a factor in how long I'll live. In 2019, Alzheimer's was the 6th leading cause of death in the United States. I'm anxious to see what all this means for my biological age estimate. The one that measures age-related post-it notes on my DNA. I don't have to wait long to find out. Let us see. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. I'm just logging in.
Me too.
It says reveal your biological age through epigenetics. Oh, wait. I have to log in first.
Well, I got mine. Your DNA age report is ready. Please click here. Shall I click?
Okay, let's do it.
download report. Okay, this is going to be, oh no, download it quick.
PDF, reveal your DNA.
So the first page has a big question mark on it.
Says we don't know. Old.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Laura was born 46 years ago. Me, 48.
Mine says 52.
And mine says 55. So this is saying that we're both older than about relatively older, right? Like, so yeah, not good.
Boo hoo.
55? I don't feel 55. Do I? I start to wonder what this means for how long I'll live. I find Statistics Canada data that shows that the average 55-year-old man can expect to live for another 25 years. And if I have just 25 years left to live, it puts my expiration date at 73 years. Now, 73 is right around the global life expectancy, and 2 decades longer than life expectancy in the worst-off countries. So I have to remember how lucky I am to even be able to expect more. But when I turn 73, Connor will just be 42, and Bryson just 39, with decades of life left to live. And yeah, I know this calculation is just a rough estimate, and every aging expert I've spoken with would likely tell me that it's bad science to calculate my own time of death based on just one epigenetics test and actuarial tables. But I choose to embrace the number 73. Not as fate, but as something to fight against. Because I've learned that even if there's not a pill to turn back the aging clock in my lifetime, there are things I can change in my own life to lower my chances of getting Alzheimer's or heart disease or any of the other things that might kill me at 73.
We have a lot of stress in our lives, so better to know than to not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is worth trying to see what we can do to change it.
Totally. Totally.
Next time on Unlocking the Fountain.
The most important thing for your audience is to know that exercise is probably the most impactful thing that you could do at any age.
I exercise, I do weightlifting.
And of course, go in for frequent medical checkups.
We want to change the environment so the healthy choice is not only easiest, but it's unavoidable.
What's my secret? I don't drink, I don't smoke, and no sex. So that's my secret.
Unlocking the Fountain is hosted and written by me, Keith MacArthur. Our associate producers are Sarah Melton and Graham McDonald, who also does our sound design. Our digital producers are S.K. Robert and Emily Cannell. Chris Oak is our story editor. Additional audio from Paramount Pictures and ITV Anglia. Our senior producer is Tina Verma, and our executive producer is Arif Nourani.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.